Once again, Art B, who will give us a history of Al-Anon. He's got some gems up here, some beautiful material. This guy here, this man, is full of wisdom when it comes to the history of Al-Anon. So let's give him a nice welcome for this next half hour.
Thank you, Art.
Thank you very much. Hi, my name is Art. Glad to be back already so soon. I'm going to do some commercials before I start talking about the history. There is a thing called AFG Announcements, which is an email server that will send you a monthly announcements of things about AFG. I've given a copy of this to your district rep. Where is Sherry? In any case, if you want to know what's happening, it really is very interesting. I have the August copy. It just came out. And the reason I brought it is because it has a little thing called Archives Corner. And it talks about this writing that came from, I'll tell you where it came from in a minute. Another way in which family groups' relationship with AA groups may be improved is outlined for us by Edna of Vallejo, California, who writes, "While our group is small and less than a year old, we're finding it a wonderful help to ourselves and also to our alcoholics. On January 28th, we held an open meeting inviting AA members from three AA groups in Vallejo. We had two non-alcoholic speakers, an alcoholic speaker from the Oakland group. Meeting was well attended. The AA members expressed a great deal of surprise and pleasure at the progress made by our groups, not in numbers, but in personality changes in ourselves, as well as a better understanding of the AA member. This was written in 1953, okay, and it says it's from the forum. They're mistaken. It's from the Al-Anon Family Group Forum, which was a magazine printed and issued by a woman from San Francisco. Had 1,000 copies sent all over the world, and it was in 1954 that Lois got the rights to use the name The Forum. So this comes from our own area. I know I get 30 minutes. I can speak for 5 hours on this topic, so I'll try to do my best. 1780s, there was a doctor who signed the Declaration of Independence who wrote a pamphlet on the disease of alcoholism. And as far as we know, it's the first time somebody called it a disease. He said there were no known treatments for alcoholism, but if they stop drinking, they get better. That pamphlet was used in medical schools for the next century. Okay. Now, in the 1840s, there was a movement called the Washingtonians. I don't know if any of you have heard of that. These were a group of guys who had come back from a temperance union meeting, and they were in the bar, and the bartender called them a bunch of hypocrites because they were drinking after they went to the temperance meeting. So the six of them started a group, and it became the largest group in the United States in terms of percentage of the population. It had 1.6 million members within 3 years. In 1945, Abraham Lincoln was one of the speakers at this movement. 1850, the movement was gone. What happened? They stopped focusing on stopping drinking, and they started focusing on the political environment of the time, which was anti-slavery. And as a result of the loss of their primary purpose, they died. very important position. Bill W. knew about that when he was writing Our Traditions in AA. He was writing it knowing very important to keep a primary purpose. So that's a long time ago. 1934 in November, some of you know, Bill W. got sober through some sort of a religious experience. He was a member of the Oxford Group. I think many of you may have heard of the Oxford Group. It was a spiritual group that had an alcoholic squad. They were trying to get alcoholics to stay sober. I learned over time that Harvey Firestone, Thomas Edison, and Henry Ford were members of the Oxford Group. That was in Ohio. Firestone's son got sober in an Oxford group in Seattle, and so that's why he started the group in Akron, Ohio. And it was in Akron, Ohio that Bill W. went on a business venture where his group was trying to take over a factory that was making automotive equipment. And in the process, that failed, and he had $10 in his pocket, which was not enough for a transportation home, and he's walking in this hotel, and he's trying to decide whether to go into the bar to have a drink. And instead, he saw a list of physicians, of clergy, I'm sorry, on a wall, called one of them who said, "Oh, yeah, there's a doctor in town. We can't get sober. Why don't I introduce you to him?" He got introduced to Dr. Bob on Mother's Day in 1935, and Dr. Bob had his last drink a month later. And that's the foundation of AA. So why am I talking about that? Well, what happened is very quickly in Akron, the women who were attending the Oxford Movement were being told they couldn't come to the alcoholic squad meetings in the Oxford Movement. So Annie S., Dr. Bob's wife, started a religious group based on the Oxford Group principles. Al-Anon does not consider that the birth of Al-Anon because there was no attention to steps and that sort of thing, but there were no steps in those days. I was fortunate to know Dr. Bob's son, who carried a letter describing this meeting, and for the first time and the only time, he gave us in Northern California to permit to print that letter in our history book, Journey to Recovery. So if you're interested in knowing how Annie S. did these. Now, by 1939, both Akron and New York were meeting separately from the Oxford group. And Bill and his group in New York told the non-alcoholics they couldn't come anymore. They closed the meeting to only alcoholics. And so Lois and her buddies were complaining in the back room for quite a while, and they finally decided maybe we should use those steps ourselves. And that happened pretty much simultaneously all around the country. The first group that was believed to be an Al-Anon group started here in California in Long Beach in January of 1941. The second one was in Chicago, January or February of 1941, and two of them fight over who's older. Doesn't matter, we found them. And it wasn't until 10 years later that somebody in the AA office said, "We got a whole bunch of these cards from people who are wanting to register their non-alcoholic groups, but we can't register them, and we can only register AA groups." So Bill told his wife that she had to start an organization. And she said no. She was 65. She wanted to go plant crocuses in the backyard. But, you know, she was one of us. You've got to help if you can. And so she wrote to the 87 groups that AA knew about. And about 50 of them, including 10 from California, wrote back, said, "Yes, we will accept the steps as they are, except for the one word in the 12th step. And we'll call ourselves AA family groups." That was the name suggested. AA said, "Sorry, can't use our name." And so they took the first syllables of alcoholics, Al, and anonymous, Anon, and put it together and made Al-Anon family groups. I've always wondered why the dash. Well, it turns out that there were groups of AAs that were forming clubs all over the countries. And they were calling themselves Al-Anon clubs. No dash. And so the dash came about to differentiate themselves from the clubs. And then Bill wrote to all those clubs and asked them to drop the last N. And today they're called Alano clubs. Whoa, made sense. There are a couple Al-Anon clubs still in existence. They didn't listen to Bill. So in 1955, Al-Anon generated its first book. I was very lucky to find this one on the internet a few weeks ago. This is a 1955 edition of the book Al-Anon Family Groups. There have been four editions of this. We're showing this to somebody earlier today, and there's a chapter in here called The Sex Problem. It's in our current literature, and I didn't know that. It was a collection of pamphlets and stuff and put together. It really was not a very fantastic book, but it's what we had. Now, in 1961, Al-Anon decided to follow AA's thoughts and have a conference that would be in charge of the traditions in Al-Anon. The World Service Conference was formed in 1961, and in that year, the Al-Anon delegates voted to no longer use the big book as part of Al-Anon literature. It had been up until then on the price list and stuff like that. Some people are wondering still today, why aren't we using it? Well, it wasn't written by us for us. It was written by somebody else for somebody else. And while there's some very good principles in it, the Al-Anon principles are different because our purpose is different. So it becomes necessary. Now, what I gave to Sherry was an article I got from the AA General Service Office talking about why they have conference-approved literature and their reasons for having conference-approved literature identical to ours. If it isn't written by them, they don't know its quality, and so they can't approve it. It doesn't mean that the literature is bad. It's just we just don't use it at meetings. I took some time to look at District 19's history. I don't know if you're familiar with this book, Journey to Recovery. This was printed 15 years ago. I was the co-author of it with Irma C. And so I went on the section on District 19. And let me give you a few little things about your district. In 1964, there were two groups listed with the World Service Office. The Al-Anon Group 1, that was in Fresno, and a group in Hanford. 1975, you had 8 groups. In 1979, you formed your intergroup. And you started your newsletter, Al-News. Do you still have Al-News? Yes, okay. And you started a 24-hour answering service, all in 1979. In the 1980s, one of your members, Carol H., reported that she started a meeting on wheels. This was, if somebody calls to go to a meeting, somebody goes, picks them up, and brings them to the meeting. And they had a slogan, "You call, we haul." In 1990, Betty B., and I know that Irma just told me she knows her well, described that you had 80 meetings in District 19. And that year, you had a yard sale, and you netted $750. Okay. Not a bad idea. Might try that again. In 1999, you had 62 groups, including 7 Spanish, 4 Alateen, and 1 school-based group. So these are all very, very important things. When I look at the history of what we've done in Al-Anon family groups, it really is a history can be seen through our literature. Now, when I came into Al-Anon in 1980, we had this pile of literature. We had Al-Anon family groups. We had Al-Anon Faces Alcoholism. We had Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage. We had One Day at a Time, and we had Hope for Children, of Alcoholics, the Alateen book. Today, we've got an entire box full of literature. I didn't put it out, but you know, what was the difference in 1980 versus now? When I came into Al-Anon, it was primarily a spousal Al-Anon family group. There were a lot of people whose spouses were drinking or not. Matter of fact, a few years ago when I was working in a museum, one of my workers with me said something that indicated to me he knew something about our steps. He probably said a slogan or two, and I said, how come, are you familiar with Al-Anon? He said, oh yeah, I went to Al-Anon for 10 years. I said, well, I've been going for 25. I've never seen you there. He said, well, I stopped going in 1979. I started in 1980. So I listed the 6 or 8 men that I knew from 1980, and he knew them all. And so I said, the next question, why did you stop coming? He said, well, my wife divorced me. I didn't have a problem. That really is the mindset. We were there to help the alcoholic. If the alcoholic didn't need help, we didn't need to be here. And it was in the early 80s that the children of alcoholics came into Al-Anon in a big way. It created a lot of controversy amongst us old-timers because we thought our way was right, and they thought their way was right. But I believe that when we acknowledge that it's our parents who helped us take the course of action that we've done, it takes a generation to get rid of those aspects. It no longer is when the spouse is gone. Parents are gone. You know, I still get concerned about my mother. And I told you, my father was the drinker. My mother would punish us if we loved my father. And, you know, that idea of being punished for loving has been very hard for me to break. And I need this program to be able to recognize that. And so the growth of Al-Anon was huge in the 1980s. We went from about 10,000 groups to about 30,000 groups in that period of time. We've expanded into, I believe we have Al-Anon now in over 100 countries. We have literature in over 40 languages. As a matter of fact, the Bay Area is filled with people from other countries, and I kind of run the local bookstore, Book Depot, and so when someone speaks with an accent, I try to find out what their other language is. And this year, I've bought literature in Chinese, in Hebrew, and in Yugoslavia for members in our group. It's not easy to find out how to do that, but your literature depot person can find out, and she can call me if she wants to. Now, a couple other things I gave to Sherry. It was a list of our conference-approved literature and how it's available to us. It used to be only in hardcover. Now we have books in soft cover. Many of you know that. How many of you know that you can buy ebooks online at this point? There's a few hands going up. So you can get it downloaded onto your computer or onto your phone. I have Courage to Change on my phone. It makes it very handy. When I'm traveling, I can listen to my in the car while I'm driving. You can get it as an audio book. And of course, you can get them in Spanish and French. So that list of books and how to get them are on the sheet of paper I gave her. And I'm trying to remember who passed out was it Andy who passed out all the slogans? I think it was on the bookmark. There are no official slogans in Al-Anon, but you know, I'm one of these people who've got to study things, and so I found out that in our books we have 22 slogans listed as slogans in the index, and so I gave that list to Sherry as well. But don't think it's an official list. Andy's list is as good as mine. One of the questions has been, how come Al-Anon changes? Or should it change? And as a matter of fact, by looking at some of our literature, you can see some huge changes. I'm going to talk about just one of those changes. This is Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage. It's the first edition. This chapter does not exist in the ones that you have. Checklists to review once in a while. Sounds pretty good. Morning division. Sounds okay. Do you get breakfast for your husband? Is it a good breakfast for a man about to do a day's work? Do you look human in the morning? Overnight hair, makeup remnants, hair curlers, crumpled nightie, house coat or last week's apron? Do you use breakfast time to review his misbehavior? Or let him know how overworked you are? Do you want him to look forward to coming home in the evening? If he's in a soured mood, can you keep cheerful inside and not resent it? This was not in the second printing. There are loads of stories that you can go through. But, you know, since I've been in Al-Anon, I was on the Al-Anon Literature Committee during the time when Survival to Recovery, Courage to Be Me, How Al-Anon Works, and Paths to Recovery were written. I was a reviewer of those four books. They were, in my opinion, an update of the earlier literature that we had, and it reflected the way that we as an organization existed in the 1990s, as opposed to the way we existed in the 1960s. The principles are the same, but our experiences are very different. I believe we're in a position right now where we have to redo all those books. There is no mention of the internet, any of the kind of new communications techniques in any of those books I just mentioned, because none of them existed. We also have the issue that most people want to look at things on their phone or an iPad rather than go and read a book. That's not true for us because we're old, but but we've got kids here who want to be able to see what we need. And so it's very important that we consider sending in new sharings for the new literature. I didn't bring the list with me, but Sherry has the list. We're developing three books right now. One for grandparents and parents of alcoholics. Okay. One for a new daily reader that reflects today's experience. And I'm right now blanking on the third one. And I think it's, you know, it's very interesting. When I come to somebody and say, would you like to write what you just said and send it in? And they say, well, I'm not good enough for that. You know, it's not, we all think that. We all think we're not good enough. But somebody else will see something good in what we wrote. And they'll either incorporate the idea, or maybe copy a sentence, or copy a whole paragraph, or an entire sharing. And it's because you and I, all of us, are willing to send in a little letter saying, this is how I felt today when I blah, blah, blah. And we keep the sharing to our own sharing rather than lecturing. And this would really be very helpful in finishing these books. And these books will be the one that helps the next generation come back to Al-Anon and Alateen. I forgot to mention for the teens when Alateen was formed. This year is Alateen's 60th anniversary. And they were formed in 1956 by two teenagers in Pasadena, California. Notice California is in this list. And their father, who was in AA, helped them form a group of their own. and it was quickly absorbed into Al-Anon as part of the Alateen process. And so right now it's at least in my neighborhood, it's difficult to get teens to come to meetings, and so we're struggling with how to acquaint them and get them involved. But what I do know is that those kids who get involved get well. And that's why it's so important for us who have children and grandchildren to remind them that they can learn something from going to an Alateen group. And if they need some help from an adult as a sponsor, it's kind of what I know from my own experience, not only helpful to them, but it's helpful to me. It's 3:00. I know you guys want a break. So I'm going to stay for a few more minutes to answer any questions that you might have and look at this. And then, as you know, I've got a long drive, so I'll be leaving after the break. Thank you.